Well, let's go ahead and have a seat this morning. If you have a Bible, I want you to have a passage marked, and it's something that that I talked to Waylon about the last day that we met, speaking of this, which I think was Monday of last week, right? Mark chapter 9. Mark chapter 9. I'm going to read you something. You may be scratching your head when I read it, but it's going to make sense here in just a moment. Verse 28 and verse 29, this is something that Waylon and I talked about the other day, and we're going to talk about it at the end of this message this morning, and I want us to pray for he and Nicole before they leave this morning. It says, when he came into the house, this is talking about Jesus, his disciples began questioning him privately, why could we not drive it out? He's talking about a demon-possessed person. Why could we not drive the demon out? And he said, this kind cannot come out by anything but prayer. If you have a King James Bible, that's what's known as the Textus Receptus, which is the majority text. That adds a word there. Fasting and prayer. Prayer and fasting. And I think that is a very good way to read that text, is the prayer and the fasting. And I want to talk about here in just a moment as we get to the end of our message, why we need to be praying for Waylon and for Nicole and their journey in planting this church in Gary, Oklahoma. So Waylon, would you come on up, and would you welcome Waylon up to go this morning? Waylon is a really good friend of mine. His wife is a good friend of Gretchen's, and we've come to know and love them. And so Waylon, if you'll take that microphone. Waylon, I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, a little bit trying to be humorous here, but the DNA thing right now is a big thing where we all want to send off and find out what culturally we're made of. Yes. And everybody thinks they've got Native American in them, and then they get the report back and they find out they've got zero. That's not the case with you.
No.
Okay, tell us, because you actually grew up on an Indian reservation.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about that. I want to start there with you, where you were born, the reservation you were on, and then we're going to kind of flesh out life on the reservation for you as an early, kind of an infant. Tell us about that.
All right. I was born on the Northern Ute Reservation in northeast Utah, and was born there. I'm a full-blood Ute, so can we continue to go, or what else?
Talk about, you've given your testimony many times. Just unleash this morning, brother. We're not holding you back.
Okay.
This man, Jack can tell you this. If you've ever heard Waylon preach, you better get ready for the Holy Spirit to be unleashed. So don't hold back on it.
Okay.
Tell us what life was like there.
Yes, I was born on the reservation, and I was born to a broken home. Father was absent from this conception on. My mother, she struggled when I was born. You know, life on the reservation, there's a lot of poverty, a lot of alcoholism, a lot of drug abuse and broken relationships. That's just, you know, you just come to terms as that's life on the reservation. And that's what I grew up in, to a mother who was struggling, who was young. I really didn't know her place in the world yet. So I was a victim. Or you might say, not really a victim, but just a chance of circumstances of living on the reservation, of alcoholism and poverty and that. And then we got to a point of where she couldn't deal with a lot of the things that were going on of raising a young child and trying to support herself and dealing with the alcoholism and the poverty. And then I was taken away by the state. I went into foster care at a very young age. And so I stayed in foster care for a while, and I was removed from all my family on the reservation, and I was removed off the reservation, and I was given to a couple of foster parents who were non-native. So the first part of my years growing up was in a native home, but then as I began to grow older and talk and walk and begin to function, I was in a non-native home, and it was really a difference for me. Because I know I wanted to be home, but I couldn't. So I was stuck here. And the foster parents, I don't remember much about them. The only thing I do remember is that they were mean. They were really mean to me. They, you know, they were just really mean. And I from that moment on, that was my only experience with white people, because everybody on the reservation is Indian. So I grew up with these people being mean to me. So I began to grow a hatred towards white people. Because, you know, why should I like him? Because the only time I was exposed to him, they were mean to me. They were mean to me. They hit me, and they did a lot of things. And it just really got me to hate white people. And so I grew up from that moment on just hating white people.
Yeah, you don't hate white people anymore because you and I are friends, right?
Well, no, I'm just joking. Well,
and that's
you're an acquired taste.
Okay, I'm an acquired taste. Okay.
You're an acquired taste. But anyway.
You know, I appreciate your openness, your transparency, because you've given that testimony
yes.
several times. That's a difficult testimony to give, because that sent you kind of on a wilderness journey with alcohol in your own life.
Yes. You know, eventually, through my mom, she decided to get her life right. She went to college. She met my stepdad. She worked out all of her issues and did what she had to do. And she eventually got me back. And he's from Oklahoma. And so she moved to Oklahoma, and then eventually I moved to Oklahoma. And we started living life. But I still had a lot of anger build up inside because of it towards my mother. Because, again, I hated white people because they were mean to me. But none of that would have happened if my mom would have done what she had to do to take care of me. So in my young, developing mind, I grew up angry. I grew up really resenting my mom. I never hated her. But I just grew up resenting her and not really opening up to her. And, you know, so I dealt with all my emotions as I began to grow in adolescence and grow up. And my life began to spiral out of control, you might say, with alcohol and with some drugs and with not wanting to do what is always right. And so I just began to just make wrong decisions, wrong choices, I just grew up that way. And it became a part of my life, and it was just normal.
Yeah.
It was normal to live that type of lifestyle of alcohol and womanizing and doing all that kind of stuff. It was just a normal life, and because I kept all my emotions to myself. And on the other side, my mom also never expressed any emotions towards me, because she grew up in a different time on the reservation. She was taken away as a young child also, but under, not by the state, but by the actual Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they took her in, they put her in boarding school. And so she grew up in boarding school, Indian boarding school, to where they cut her hair. Her and her sisters couldn't talk their language. They got their mouth washed out with soap every time they spoke their language. And it was, you know, it was a tough life. And she grew up not with a mother, but with a matron. And so it's called the boarding school effect. And she never received love from the matron. All she got from the matron was know how to get up and clean the room and cook and to do all of the things that a mother should do, but except for she was never taught how to love, because she grew up in that system. So she never knew how to love her children or love me. So we just grew up just knowing each other.
Yeah.
Just knowing each other.
And you said that ran into, even as you've been married to Nicole, and something God's really redeemed in you.
Yeah.
And I want to say this as a word of hope in the gospel, and I'm kind of jumping around here in what we talked about, but one of the things that God has redeemed in you, and I think this is so cool with their heart for people, one of the things that God has redeemed in you, and I think this is really a picture of His grace, is you were taken from your mother, you were put into foster care. Really, you had a tension with your stepdad. You said there wasn't a lot of emotional connection there. You struggled with that for years. But when you're converted, God gives you a heart for young people.
Yes.
And it's an amazing thing. Tell the congregation here how many young people have stayed in your home with you and Nicole through either foster care or through just needing a place to stay.
We've fostered 18 kids. And we've opened our home to just six kids who just needed a place to live. We actually have two living with us now whose mom is absent parents, or her rights were taken away because of drug use. And the father is consumed with his own life also of jumping from relationship to relationship. And they've just been taken in tow with them. And finally, they wanted something stable. And so three of them moved in with us. One graduated, went on to college. And so we still have two in the house, and one's graduating this year, and the next one will graduate in 4 years. And
yeah.
You know, we don't have no custody papers. We don't have nothing on them, but the town knows and the school knows. So they give us grace in that part to where we can sign off on a lot of things, and that we take them to their doctor's appointments, and we take them wherever we have to. It's just, you know, the town knows, so they rally around us and they support us, and maybe they understand.
Yeah, but
so.
That's the redeeming grace of God, that you can be someone who didn't have a father, who didn't really connect with their mother, didn't connect with their stepfather, and God gives you a burden.
Yes.
for young people, and for you to have had 25 people in your home, and mm-hmm. and some of the stories you tell about one day turned into two, and two into three, and then some of those kids stay for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, and it's been an amazing journey, and we, you know, we've always opened our home. When I did get the call to ministry, it was in youth ministry, and some of the people still contact us and keep in contact with us, and like right now, you know, when we come home in the evenings, there's at least 10 teenagers and little kids, you know, just in our house. And sometimes when we come home, they're sitting there waiting on us on our couch, eating a bowl of cereal, watching TV, because they know, they feel like that's a safe place that they can go and they can be themselves. And so we just open our home and just enjoy it and treat them no different than any other the kids that come through, because sometimes they look for discipline and love and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. One of the things that you post on Facebook all the time is you're always feeding people Indian tacos.
Yeah.
And I'm always jealous of that because you know, you're always opening your home up for that. Conversion. You were converted in an Assembly of God church.
Yes.
Tell us about that, and tell us kind of where you started to have a little bit of a problem being in a what we call a charismatic church, Pentecostal church, and that's going to kind of come in where you and I hook up. And then we're going to get into what you're doing currently. So tell them a little bit about your conversion to Assembly of God Church.
Yeah, I still had my, you know, I was still living that downward spiral of life. Even in old age, it came into, you know, I didn't get converted until I was 38. It was that me and Nicole were dating, and we got married, I was still not converted, and we're still living a destructive lifestyle, and we were headed for a divorce. It was okay, and we were like, okay, you know, this we tried it didn't work, and we can go our own ways, and nobody's gonna, you know, but we had a child, and at the birth of that child, we decided, okay, these people keep asking us to go to church, and we're gonna go to church just to appease them, so they'll quit asking. So we're gonna go one time and then quit asking, and so we went, and the preacher there was preaching, and I still remember what I was sitting, still remember what I was doing, and you know, before he even gave the altar call, I was already walking down there to give my life, and I gave my life, and he became a great mentor in my life, and he's the one that encouraged me, and just really was there for me when I had my questions and I struggled in my young faith. And then when he passed away, I had nobody that I could really talk to and begin to try to understand. But then God began, as I began going to school and was going to be an Assembly of God minister, and I became an Assembly of God minister. I was credentialed through the Assemblies of God, but I still had some questions and about the charismatic faith that really nobody could answer. So what I did is what you're supposed to do. I went to the scriptures, and the biggest issue that I had was the, as I call it, acting a fool in church. Where they're running around and they're laughing and they're barking like dogs and you know, and that has always been a problem with me, because I always see, when you read the Bible and it talks about the fruit of the Spirit, one of them is self-control. That when God is present, there will always be self-control in who you are. And that when the Spirit does manifest himself in our body, it always brings glory to Jesus. And when people are confused and scared, and don't know what's going on, how is that bringing glory to Jesus? And so that's one of the main problems that I have with this, is sometimes they get so caught up in wanting to see the manifestation of the Spirit, they forget Jesus along that journey. And so I just really began to struggle with that as I begin to grow up in the faith, as you might say, mm-hmm. you know, because we all want the manifestation of the Spirit in our lives. We all want the fruit of the Spirit in our lives. We all want the gifts of the Spirit in our lives. But when it takes away from Jesus and what he wants to do in our lives, then there is no glorifying of him and doing what he's called us to do.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's where I said I wanted to kind of talk about our journey together. You and I get together. We start talking theology and preaching and all those things. And one thing I'll give Waylon is he's a humble man in the sense that he's willing to learn, he's willing to listen. And so I gave you some resources. Yeah. And one of the things that I gave you was A.W. Pink's book on the attributes of God. And that kind of, you texted me like 2 or 3 days later and said, my mind is blown. Yeah. And the reason I had him read that is I wanted you to have that big picture of God's character and not just be limited to this one aspect of God's character. And you're a guy that I see a work in progress, and you're growing in your theology and growing in your understanding of preaching. His wife is even telling him his preaching's better, right?
Yes.
Yeah, his preaching is better. He's listening better. So. But you've gone to more of an expositional preaching,
yes.
Verse by verse.
Yes.
And that's made a big, huge difference even in your people and in your wife's approach to how excited she is about. The man can preach. I'm going to give him that. And like I said, anybody that's ever heard him, he is definitely filled with the Spirit. And I told him, delivery is not your problem. So we just wanted to get the content kind of to get it reined in a little bit.
And you didn't give me that book. You told me to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, we're going to get it. He didn't give me the book. He said, well, you need to buy this book by A.W. Pink. So I had to buy the book. Don't want him to mislead his flock.
Okay, okay. I was acting super gracious trying to get my people to say how great I was.
Yeah.
And then you dropped the bomb on them. So that's good. That's good. one of the things that I want to talk about, you have two hats that you wear right now.
Yes.
You wear the hat of a police chief in Gary, Oklahoma. And you've been with the police department on the reservation. How long were you on the reservation as a police officer?
12 years.
12 years.
Yes. Oh, excuse me, 11 years.
Okay. And then you've been with Gary
almost 13.
Almost 13 years. So this man has a long, extensive career in law enforcement, but then God gives you a heart to reach the Native American people.
Yes.
And I want to talk about two things that you're doing to get there. One of them that all of us are called to do, commissioned to do, is to go to them.
Yes.
Tell them where you're going to reach those people, because to me, this is the coolest door that God has opened for you. You're going to what they call a sweat lodge.
Yes.
Explain to us what a sweat lodge is.
Okay. It's a traditional ceremony where they'll... It's like a covering. It has different meanings for different tribes, but it's a place where they can go and purify themselves. They heat up rocks and they put water on there and they sweat and it gets all the impurities and everything that they've done in their, you know, that the bad things that they put in their body. It helps bring it out, and it actually represents a new birth. That you go in one way but you come out purified and clean when you come out. And so that's what it means. That's what it's supposed to mean. But they invited me one time and I went. And so I just sat there and observed and just be the part of it. And so but I continue to go back and to go back and go back to meet them in their lifestyle and what they do and to bring Jesus to them. And so to be and just to sit there and to listen and to observe and to be respectful. And so as I continue to go, they continue to see that. And so they say, well, one day they said, do you want to say something? I said, well, I am a preacher, so you know, we may be here a while. And so, but they get, and I began talking and, you know, talking about the Bible, talking about Jesus. And so now when I go, there's, you know, it's an honor to speak in there. And they give me as much time as I want to speak. And I always speak the gospel and how things can how Jesus can change their life and that how, you know, this is a representation of a new birth, but Jesus is the only one that can give you a new birth. And so, you know, I just do what Paul did when he went to Greece and just began telling them, you know, what you worshiped, you really don't know, but it's Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's Jesus. And so, and we've got people to convert to Christianity. We've got people who come to our church now. We got people who have not yet really bought on, but come to us for advice and comes to us to want to talk things out. And when they're having problems, we, you know, we're the first place they go.
Yeah.
And so it's a good journey. You know, it's really hot in there, so I had to suffer with that. But you know. If we can't suffer with them, how can we reign with them, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you said, and I found it interesting, I thought just a nugget for the people, everybody thinks they can somehow atone for their own sin,
yes,
or they can take care of their own sin. And you said these are all external things.
Yes.
And I think it's so awesome that you're taking to them the gospel, yes, that you're preaching the gospel to them in the midst of that. There's one thing that I want to say. The first way that you're reaching these people is you're going to them. Second way is you've planted a church in Gary.
Yes.
And what's the name of the church?
Well, it's not a, well, we call it a plant, but it's really not a plant. It was a church that was closed down for so many years. And so we just decided to open it back up. It's called the All Tribes Baptist Church in Gary.
Okay. And it's with you went through it with me, the Indian American
Baptist Association.
Okay, so they're the ones kind of
under the American Baptist Churches USA. Yes.
Yeah, they're kind of putting you out there. You're resurrecting, if you will,
yes,
an older church that's been closed down. But you're All Tribes Baptist Church.
Yes.
And one of the things that I wanted to say during this is that you and I talked about the difficulty of reaching, and I'm not pigeonholing anything, but you told me that it's difficult to reach Native American people for kind of a twofold reason. One of the things that you told me, and I'm not afraid to speak this here, is you said you thought the government taking care of them was one of the worst things that ever happened.
Yes.
Why?
Because it gives you, it's just like when we spoil our children, they have a sense of entitlement as they grow up. And they expect that we as parents are to do this and to do that. And because of the dependency of when all the tribes were basically herded on reservations, they had to rely on the government to keep them going. They had to get their rations, they had to get clothing, everything for them to survive on reservation life was given by the government. Mm-hmm. And so that was just passed from generation to generation of the expectation of the government to take care of them. And in certain areas, treaties do provide for them for education, healthcare, and stuff like that, but not for all the basic needs of life.
Yeah, and the people you're trying to reach are the Cheyenne Arapaho.
Yes.
And you said there's a lot of poverty there.
A lot of poverty.
Yeah.
At least 40% in our community.
Okay.
And we're 40% Native American in our community. So.
Okay. So that's the one kind of the external difficulty. The internal difficulty is the Native American religion.
Yes.
And tell them kind of the basics of the Native American religion and what you're having to wade through. And this is where the prayer and fasting comes in. You said they believe in a creator God.
Yes.
But you said, and this is kind of a Romans 1 situation, they end up worshiping the creation rather than the creator.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. They believe in, most Native religions believe in a creator, but somewhere along their journey they have switched from the actual worship of the Creator to the worship of the things that He created, that they'll hold high in esteem, like eagle feathers, maybe buffalo skulls, and the things that God has created, they kind of superimpose that God, that's what they began to worship, and that's what they began to look for help. You know, when we see people get in trouble, when they're traditionalists, first thing they do is they grab their cedar and they grab their eagle wing and they begin to do ceremonies and stuff like that. And you know, instead of looking to the Creator or God for the answers to get through life. And that's just been a shift that's happened over the past maybe 150 years, you might say, because I have some older, the real old Native Americans say that they're getting it wrong, those are just tools and instruments to use that they are to get to God, but not to be God, and how things have got mixed up as time went on.
Yeah. What about the four elders? You talked to me about that the other day.
Yeah, it was you know, sometimes it's so easy to explain the Bible and what goes on. Like the Arapaho people, they have what's called the four old men, and they actually run all of the religious and ceremonial things of the thing. And they say that I'm one of the people that always ask questions. Why is there four old men? Well, there's what he said. What I've been told, the four old men is a representation of what that which is in heaven. And I say, what? And they said, that's just a representation of four old men that are in heaven. And then I said, well, you know, there's a story in the Bible that where God sits on his throne, there's four living creatures around him. And that they're just constantly around God and praising God and worshiping God and doing all of, you know, all of that. And I said, you know, and then they said, really? That's in the Bible? I said, yeah. I said, you ought to read it. You ought to read it. It's in there. So, you know, I think God has says, okay, I want you to convert my people. And I want you to show them even in what they have. That even though it probably is wrong.
You know the truth behind it.
But I'm still there.
Yeah.
You know, what was meant for evil can be used for good. And that if we look, we can find God everywhere, you know. And so, because sometimes as they live their lives, they look to the external instead of the internal. And that's the problem that we see, because they're not consistent. They're just want that internal change, but are so used of looking for the external solution. Mm-hmm. And when life gets hard, they continue to look for that external solution instead of looking for the internal. And, you know, we the ones that we have reached and we minister to and that they see the internal change.
Yeah.
And the new birth. Yes.
Yes. Tell us when you're going to go into the transition, because we need to be praying for you and your family, the full-time ministry with all tribes.
January. It's coming.
So you're stepping down as police chief.
Stepping down as police chief.
So if you're ever going through Gary and you don't want to get a speeding ticket after January,
you're on your own.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Because you're not going to bail anybody out after that.
No.
So.
No.
Everybody turn to Mark chapter 9. And I want to say something that you and I talked about, just to kind of hit on something. Jesus is talking to his disciples in Mark chapter 9 about demon possession, and some people may be sitting here scratching their head. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus gave his disciples authority to cast out demons. And in Mark chapter 9, they meet a man whose son is demon possessed, and they can't cast the demon out. They're confused, the man is confused, and they come to him and they say, why could we not cast it out? And Jesus, one of the first questions that he asked the father is, how long has this been going on? If you look at verse 21, he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And one of the things that I've discovered in this passage is the longer that a demon had possession of someone, the harder it was to cast out. And it required extra measures, divine measures, to not just go with authority and depend on the fact that Jesus has granted you that authority, but to trust Christ and to trust God and to pray and to fast in order for this to come out. I'm not going to ask you, I'm going to answer this question because we're going to pray for you. The Native American religion is a long, deep-seated religion. It's been there for a long time. And we said it's got a long possession, if you will, of the people. We said you need to go with the gospel. There's no doubt about that. But we need to be praying and fasting for this man. and for His ministry. And that's one of the things when we call this missions emphasis, is that we would remember to take those measures for you and for your church. Because one of the things that we said, whether it's someone who's been indoctrinated with false religion, for every year they've been in that, it's going to take years and years and years for their mindset to shift. For, as you said, that internal change to take place. They can be saved and still have those ways of going back to that. Prayer and fasting is going to be the key. You and I have talked about this. Waylon said he wanted to start discipling men. I said, get a list of men and start praying over them. Don't go try to find somebody. Go get a list of men and start praying over them. So I want to do that for you today. I want to get you up here, and I want us to pray over you. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Would you guys thank Waylon for his time with us? And is there anything you want to say as we close by word of prayer or anything that you need just in those prayers?
You know, just keep our church in prayer. You know, when this is a – how long do I got? Okay. Well, this is an old mission church. It was started in the late 1800s, this church. It's when the Baptists came to the old Indian Territory and they began setting up. And this was one of the Arapaho churches that they set up, and it's gone through a long history. But in 2013, this church closed down. I was with the assemblies, so we just really wasn't on the radar then, and then it closed. Well, then the city condemned the building. And so then when we took over in January of 2017, we, you know, God laid it on our heart to start this church, and we converted from Pentecostalism to being a Baptist, which is a whole
big shift.
Big shift. but when you get down to it, it's really not. Yeah. It's really not. And so, but since the building was condemned, we're home missions under the American Baptist Home Mission Society. So they sent architects out and they sent everybody out. But since then, we've been doing ministry out of a community hall. And so we decided that, you know, we're not going to allow a building to, you know, to hinder what God wants done with the people. So we've been ministering. Everything we do has been out of a community hall. We do Bible study in our house. We do all of our work seem like God has just opened a way to where we can use this community hall anytime we need it. And so, but we know that eventually we're going to need to get back into the church. So if you could just pray that God just begins to see fit to send workers, funds, whatever we need to do to get a church, the church building,
yep,
operational again, to get back going again. It was in bad condition when we took it over. We've actually stripped everything already out. Everything's already been taken out. An architect from back east came and worked up a new set of plans. But, you know, with us being an upstart church, we can't afford to do none of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
None of it, because usually we pour a lot back into the community. Like my wife, she has a burden, too, for the people. We do a Saturday morning breakfast for the community of anybody who's struggling and can't afford anything. So we feed the community breakfast every Saturday. We feed breakfast every Sunday. You know, we even get people from other churches coming to eat breakfast and then going to their church. And so, but that's what we do.
Which that's wrong.
But that's what we do. I mean, yep, we're there to serve the people. We're not there to, you know, the people first.
Yeah.
And so, but just keep our church in prayer every when you think of us.
Yes, absolutely. Well, would you put that mic up, stand up here, and Jack and maybe a couple others come up, or a few others that want to lay hands on Waylon. I want to pray for him and his time as being a church planner. And some of these guys that are coming up know Waylon. They've heard him preach, and they've been part of his ministry. And so we want to pray over Waylon. Would you guys stand with us? And Nicole, if you want to come up here.